Welcome to Jacob's Well, everyone. If you're new here, dads, we're really honored to have you with us. Thanks for joining us this morning. I was really moved by Mike's prayer and the sung prayer as well as what he was praying in prose. And I just wanted to just read a passage that it reminded me of that probably was in his mind a little bit at that point. In Romans 8, it says, "We know the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. Not only so, but we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit, we groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we were saved. But hope that is seen is no hope at all. Who hopes for what they already have? But if we wait for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently." We know God will respond. For those of you guys who are visiting this morning or haven't been in the last couple weeks, we've been in a series where we're talking about learning to live as people of promise. We've been looking at the story of Abraham and Sarah and the patriarchs and the promises God made to them and the problems that God allowed to be introduced into their journey, into their story. And that's where we left off last week. And this week we're going to spend time meditating a little bit on that stage that sometimes we find ourselves in, where we're waiting, where we're groaning. Spend a little more time lingering on that. As we've been talking about, God, what he does sometimes is he takes broken people. He takes the most unlikely people, the people who the world would not even give a blink of an eye to, and he uses them and promises things to them that require a response. And then pretty fast, what happens is what happened with Abraham and Sarah. There's a difficulty introduced into that situation. They're 100 years old, and God's promise to them hinges on them bearing a son, bearing an heir to carry on this heritage that will lead to Abraham being a father of many nations like the sand of the sea. Sometimes our own brokenness complicates those problems, as we saw with Abraham too. Abraham had this trust issue, and yet we see throughout his story, he's always having these difficulties trusting God's provision. And yet he's known to be the father of those who believe. We know from our perspective, we see that his journey, his path, his story, and the way he responded to things, the good, the bad, God redeemed that. And now he is the father of the faith. A pretty amazing thing that God does, even taking account of our brokenness and redeeming even our broken actions as we respond to what he does and says. There's a value of remaining and pondering that. And so today we are going to do that, but it's also Father's Day. So I want to acknowledge that too. And, you know, Father's Day is a complicated day for many reasons. A lot of people have had great experiences with amazing fathers that have blessed them and nurtured them and formed them into healthy, maturing people. But so many people sitting all around you right now have had awful, difficult, abusive, maybe neglectful experiences with fathers, and so much so that the word father is sometimes even a hard word to hear. And so I want to acknowledge that too. And the good, the bad, the mixed experiences that we have with fathers, it really affects the way we understand our relationship with God. Our primary way of understanding God is as a father, as he's revealed to us in Scripture. A father who loves his people, who promises things to his people, and is faithful and nurtures us and matures us. And if we've had difficult experiences in life with our natural fathers, sometimes it's hard to have a good impression or a good understanding of what it is, what it means when we hear that God is a father. Some of us have no conception of that at all. I know that I grew up without a father. It's hard, it's a long process for me to get a grip for what that really means in any sense at all. And I think God designed fathers in the creation, designed natural fathers to reflect and to point really towards him. And sometimes we have less accurate representations of that by far, and a lot of restoration has to take place. I recently bought a new camera because we were going on a vacation, and we had had a camera from about 5 years ago that was like 1 megapixel, I think, or something, which everyone's laughing. I'm not very technically up on things. I'm not an early adopter. So at the time, it was like, this camera was great. Like, wow, it's a digital camera. I don't have to put film in it. It was amazing. And so, but then one time we blew up a picture a little bit larger, and we realized you blow up pictures with a camera that's lower quality, the representation is not very good. It didn't look really anything like the actual person in the picture. Well, we got this camera recently. Now, I don't know if this is like the top of the line, but 7 megapixels. It's amazing. And it's cheaper than cameras were back then, too. So seven. And so the dramatic difference, we took our daughter to the beach and we took some pictures of her and we blew some of these pictures up for her birthday. And you can see every grain of sand reflected in these pictures, like 11 by 17, huge photo. It's a much more accurate representation of what she looks like and what was happening in that situation. And so I think sometimes fathers, earthly fathers, are like photos. They can be more or less accurate depictions of the Father that they're meant to point to. And I want us to just ponder as we talk this morning and look at the problems that get introduced into our lives and how God is a Father to us. How does your Father photo influence your relationship or your understanding of God the Father? How does that photo, is it a lower quality photo? Is it a higher quality one? There's good, there's bad, there's mixed experiences that we have that affect that. And be aware of that, especially as we face the problems that God allows into our life. We can easily say, okay, this is not healthy guidance. This is abuse. This is a bad thing. This is punishment. We have all these different images that will pop into our head as we move through life under God's guidance. I want to keep that part of yourself that maybe has some understanding to a lesser or greater degree. As we look at this passage in Hebrews chapter 12 today, we're going to spend some time looking at the Father's presence in our lives. It's Hebrews chapter 12, verses 5 through 11. Read it with me if you would. And have you completely forgotten this word of encouragement that addresses you as children? It says, my son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not lose heart when he rebukes you. Because the Lord disciplines those he loves, and he chastens everyone he accepts as his child. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as his children. For what children are not disciplined by their father? If you are not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are not legitimate children at all. Moreover, we have all had parents who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of spirits and live? Our parents disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good, that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Any impressions or thoughts, comments, anything strike you as you read that this time? Yeah, Kevin. That's good. Kevin was saying, and people who have children, you recognize this, because I totally recognize that too, that you start learning to think about fatherhood from your own perspective, which is even scarier maybe, because suddenly you're in the position to really influence and form these little growing beings. And that's that Kevin was saying that's actually a more formative way that he's learning to understand God the Father. Yeah, I can see a lot of that in myself too. Anything from this passage in particular that spoke, or any impressions or comments about it? Yeah, Amy?
I think the part about sharing in his holiness offered hope.
Yeah, that God's discipline is allowing us to be formed, to share in his holiness. Amy was saying that offers some hope, maybe perspective to see what's going on. Yeah, Matt? Yeah. That struck you. Matt was saying he's trying to wrestle with what it means to make light of God's discipline. Yeah, that we'll look at that. That is that's something that stands out. It does initially seem kind of like an unusual way to approach discipline. Yeah.
Hmm.
It's an interesting approach. It's true. Yeah, he was saying that. I think in your question, probably I'm guessing stems from our natural inclination to ask God to keep us out of difficult situations. It's kind of like the natural paradigm we have for prayer. God, keep me from any trouble. And he was saying when we ask God to not allow us to go through discipline, we're actually kind of asking to be maybe unsunned or something, like to not be his child as much. It's an interesting angle to look at it from. Yeah. He was saying sometimes it's hard to really interpret what's going on. Like, what is God training me for? What is God forming me into or teaching me or instructing me in this situation? But then when he finds out, he realizes, I really don't want to do that anyway, which I think is a natural response. We don't want to engage in challenges that make us get out of our comfort zones as much. And that's really a lot of what God is doing, is he brings us towards maturity in these ways. Something that you might recognize when you look at that passage again, the word discipline pops up 8 or 10 times, depending on which translation you look at. I think it was like 10 times in here. And in Greek, there's 8 occurrences of this idea of discipline. And there's something really amazing and powerful embedded in that, and that this passage actually gives us an alternative paradigm to understand what difficulties and trials are in terms of God's discipline. And just to review this book of Hebrews for people who maybe are new to it, we've got this letter that's written to comfort and to exhort and to encourage people who have come out of a religious system that basically controlled their family life, their social life, everything. All their roots are embedded in their relationship to the Jewish faith, and the Christian faith is emerging out of that matrix of Judaism at that time. And so for people, and you can see this in the world today in more traditional cultures. When you leave that culture, when you for whatever reason leave that place, you're going to experience a lot of opposition and resistance and shunning and shame. And that's what was happening to these young Christians, these people that were embarking on this way of following Jesus. Suddenly, everything that they used to cling to has been removed from them, and they're trying to struggle and make their way in a world that has turned completely against them on many levels. And they're tempted to go back. Naturally, they're tempted to say, you know what? I don't want to deal with this. I don't want to go through these trials and hardship. I think I could go back. I could find a way to escape from this just by going back into that system and that more comfortable and maybe less ambiguous life that I came out of. I think there's also a question of maybe being punished too. Am I being punished when I encounter these trials coming into that situation? So let's look at this alternative paradigm for understanding the difficulties we have in life and when we encounter shunning or shame or when we encounter other circumstances in life that persist. Hebrews 12 offers us an alternative way to understand and interpret those situations. And when it starts out in this passage, it starts out by saying, don't make light of the Lord's discipline, as Matt was pointing out. And I know initially it's like, well, how do you make light of that? And the thing that comes to mind for me is, and I could probably think of a lot of examples of this, and I think maybe looking back on our lives as children, this will ring some, or this will register some things, but there was a time where I had graduated from high school, and I was still living at home, and my mother said, there's one thing I really regret that I didn't teach you enough about, and it was about finances, about how to handle finances. I never showed you how the bills work in the house or how you do these things, and I think that's a really important thing for your life as an adult in the future. So I want you to go through this course at church that'll be in the evenings all through the summer. I don't know, 8 or 12 weeks. It was crazy. Think about the summer after you graduate from high school. Do you want to go to some financial training course? It was like it was really horrible. I not the course, but that knowing I was going into that in that summer, and I just really resented it. I basically just said, you know, I have to do this, and I'm going to do it, but you know, I'm not going to get anything out of this. I'm just going to go and sit, and I just made this really dumb choice to just go there and just try to just let it pass through my mind and not get anything out of it. I was a little resentful, and I was just going to despise it and dismiss that disciplinary process, that training. And for those not many people know me, but my wife could tell you that I could have used that organized, structured financial wisdom. I really could have used that training. Looking back, and I'm like, oh, man, I wish I would have submitted to that training and received from it. And so now I'm going to have to go to Jeremy Eccles and get some advice from him because I need help with that area of life. I didn't submit to that. I didn't receive that. I made light of it, and I dismissed that completely. You see, when God brings us in those seasons, it's because he loves us. And our parents, those who send us into times of training, they love us. It's not to be hard. It's not to take something away from us. But sometimes it does encroach on our privacy or our desire to control our own lives. But it's love-based. As it says in verse 6, it says, God disciplines those he loves. He chastens those he accepts as children. I wonder if it's hard to reconcile this word discipline. I wonder if for people who've had especially grainy photos of the Father in heaven, whose life under a father has maybe been difficult, I wonder if discipline is easy to grasp as a good thing sometimes, especially for people, and so many people have had this, been victims of abuse or neglect or apathy from their fathers. It's really hard to grapple with the idea that a stern application of boundaries could be a healthy thing. And also, the world itself, our culture, our society around us, the empire, as we tend to call it at Jacob's Well, it's really invested in combating anything that's going to create values in people that don't serve the empire, the culture around us. Anything, any kind of formative training that maybe will make us disciples of Christ instead of disciples of the system around us, the culture has so many messages that it tries to send to prevent the subversion of its values around us. And I think one person that had some amazing insights into this, the fact that culture tries to create values in us that you have to be skeptical about, is Michel Foucault. I can't pronounce it. It's a French writer from sometime in the 20th century. And he wrote about discipline and punishment. He wrote a book called Discipline and Punish, actually. He talked about the prison system in our culture and how basically culture was trying to create docile bodies that could respond to it and do whatever it wanted. It wanted people that could be in the army, people that could be in the economy, people that could serve in its civil affairs, whatever it was. It wanted docile bodies that were trained and conditioned to follow its value system. And I think that in a lot of ways it's good to have a healthy critique of messages coming to us, but we often transfer that distrust over to God for a variety of good and bad reasons. And we have to be careful not to distrust God the way we distrust and are skeptical of messages around us in a healthy sense as well. And there's some common misconceptions too about discipline that are important to think about. One of them is, what's the difference between discipline and punishment? Like, discipline or punish? We don't know if there's a real difference. A lot of times those are used synonymously. Now, punishment is based on law. It's based on a legal system, and it wants to guard the society, guard all the other people around the individual person. It's not really, punishment is not invested in caring for the person so much as making sure that person doesn't not care for other people or hurt other people around them. But discipline is a much wider concept. Sometimes it involves that kind of correction, but it's completely based on love, and it's invested in growing the disciple. The discipline is something that grows a disciple. You know, those words are the same, disciple and discipline. And the intent is from love. The Father loves his followers, loves the people, his children, the ones that he's growing. And his love is wanting them to grow and not just to guard other people around or guard a system from them. I think a lot of times even in our Christian faith, sometimes we think that our object is to defend the faith from people's dark hearts or something. And God the Father's invested in lovingly growing you into his image, loving you as a father, his child. And it's important to separate that from mere punishment. The definition of this word paideia or paiduo in Greek is this word for discipline we have here. It has the nuances of providing guidance for upbringing and training and for informed and responsible living. That's a more broad way to understand it. It's not merely keeping people in a box at all. It's about training and forming people for living in a mature way, which a good father does. You notice there's an emphasis on training. Even in this passage, the last word it says that it produces a harvest of peace and righteousness for those who are trained by it. It's not mere teaching. It's not simply a lesson, a snapshot, like, oh, here's your lesson, you learned it, okay, move on. No, training is a longer process. It's more complicated, it's more messy, it's harder. It's something you have to go through over a period of time. And that's what God is doing in his discipline. There was a wise man who I think they quoted in a movie one time. He said, some things, some important things can't merely be taught. They must be lived. The most important things in life can't just be taught. They have to be lived. You have to experience and go through it and let yourself be formed by it, not simply receive the knowledge of it in an intellectual way. We also struggle with the difference between discipline and abuse, especially those of us who had really nasty, difficult upbringings and have experienced people using power badly to inflict wounds on us. And discipline, it can look like just simply someone using their power to get their way. There's a term for a healthy father that psychologists have been using. It's called salient fathers. And I'm going to read a little bit. My friend Andy Comiskey wrote a little bit about this concept of salient fathers. And I want to read a paragraph that he wrote about this idea. He says, "The father seeks to train us, to engender in us a solid sense of authority that enables us to act decisively and clearly in the face of life's many challenges. Psychologists describe this type of father as salient and claim that such a presence enables children to steer clear of many problems. By salient, they mean a father who is authoritative and nurturing at the same time, equal parts strength and benevolence. Children who possess such a father are motivated to grow upward and outward from their surroundings. Secure in his love, they also become outer-directed in their relationships and vocations." I think in our culture, what we have a lot of times is a confusion between this idea of a healthy father and mere sentimentality. Our culture, instead of salience, we're taught sentimentality. And by the way, salience, the idea here is that word basically means anything that causes an object to rise up from its surroundings, that enables it to move upward and outward. It's used of springs that come from underground and that arise on the surface. It's used of rocks that protrude from the surface of the ground. Instead of allowing that object to merely just be comfortable, so to speak, in its surroundings and blend in, it actually is the act of enabling it to come out, to rise out of its environment, and to be formed in the way it's designed to be. But our culture wants us to think in terms of mere sentimentality. Don't challenge people to rise. Don't try to form people into something that's different from what they are now. Let people remain there. Let people stay. Be happy. It's merely be happy, be comfortable. No one has the right to challenge anything. And that's really going to run at odds with the love the Father has for us in his life and his path of discipline. Discipline is not about feeling good or being happy. It's about growing and being formed into maturity and true joy. There's a passage that C.S. Lewis wrote that I think is it really speaks to this understanding, this misunderstanding we have of fatherhood and in that sense. He says, "By the goodness of God, most of us mean mere kindness, the desire to see others happy. What would really satisfy us would be a God who said, of anything we happen to like doing, what does it matter as long as they are contented? We want, in fact, not so much a father in heaven as a senile grandfather in heaven, a senile benevolence who, as they say, liked to see young people enjoying themselves and whose plan for the universe was simply that a good time was had by all." Yet, I think you can relate to this idea, this value that's out around us. Yet mere niceness cares not whether its object becomes good or bad, provided only that it escapes difficulty. As Scripture points out, it is illegitimate sons and daughters who are spoiled. The true sons and daughters are disciplined. If God is love, he is by definition something more than mere niceness. God is the salient father. This God is the true father. All the images we have from outside or from our own experience, they're mere reflections, they're mere photos of the reality of what the Father God is. He's not a senile or silent or abusive or neglectful father. He's a salient father calling us to arise upward and outward from our comfort zones and from the things that would maybe not allow our identity to be shaped. He has a love-based training program, and discipline is integral to that. He's not going to allow us to just simply cower or hide in moments when we would like to take an easier path. He forms us for holiness. He forms us, and as it says in verse 10 of this passage, that he's sharing his very character with us in this formation, that we could share in his holiness. As we wait for his holiness to hover over me, we want God's holiness to be our holiness. We share that fellowship with him. That's what a good father is calling us to do, to share his own character. But we have a difficulty responding to this. It's hard to know, like, how do I respond? Where do I go? And this passage speaks a lot to that. It talks about endurance. It talks about submission, another word that is very difficult in the value system we're trained by. But this idea of, it says in verse 7, it says, endure for the purpose of formation. Or basically, in this translation, it said endure hardship for discipline. Just like physical exercise, like a lot of us try to embark on physical exercise regularly, which is a good thing, and it's a process that hurts a lot of times. It's forming, it's changing the dynamics of our body, it's making us sore in places, it breaks down some of our muscles, it seems counterintuitive from a mere moment-by-moment glance, but it's a forming process, it's strengthening us. In 1 Timothy chapter 4, He says, exercise yourself toward godliness. He says, physical training is good for many things, but godliness is good for all things. He's talking about this formative process of a disciple, that you're exercising and training yourself physically. I think there's a lot of similarities between that and the pain of that is momentary and the results that produces and what God is doing in our lives too. There was a few years back where, a year ago that I got a membership at Scott Fitness, which is like a block away from here, and it was great. I was so excited. I was like, I can walk a block away, and on my lunch break, I can work out for an hour with my friend Sko, who lived just another block away. We were like, this is the perfect plan. I don't know if Sko's here, Scott Raymond, and we were workout partners for a while. Now, we were not good workout partners. We found out there's a reason for physical trainers. Like, I never really realized, I was like, why would I need a physical trainer? Some of us really need that. And me and Sko did not motivate each other well. We went through the season where we paid for a membership. We showed up there pretty regularly, but we gave each other a lot of grace. I kind of liked having him as a workout partner because if I wanted to cancel, he was always like, yeah, I'm glad you said that. And I was like, all right. And he did the same to me. I'd be like, oh, yes, we'll get out of it today. That's not the attitude you want to have when you're trying to get in shape. So we didn't do well as workout partners, but We went through that season, and I paid all this money, I put in all this time, and I didn't submit to the training. I didn't allow myself to receive from it. And it was another wasted experience in a lot of ways. It was something that I didn't receive the benefits of that, even as I went through that process. And God is calling us in this passage to be present, to be responsive, to recognize what's going on, and to submit to it, to endure for the purpose of formation. Not simply to be uncomfortable and sweaty for those hours, but to know there's an end here that we're moving towards. And I think in a lot of ways, what we're talking about here, this alternate way of understanding difficulties in life, it's about a paternity test. We've seen this passage. It talks about the difference between legitimate and illegitimate children. This is a paternity test for us in the faith. When we follow Christ, you're inevitably going to encounter opposition from the world, from the flesh, from the enemy, all the forces that want to keep this from happening, this Christian life, this life of discipleship. They'll come against you. You're going to face so much suffering and opposition. Jesus is constantly reminding us of this. But we can take heart in knowing that this is God's way of showing that we are children, that he is actively engaging in our lives to discipline us, to train us, to form us for his good purposes. And as Kevin was pointing out, I'm learning so much about, in fact, maybe God is restoring my image of fatherhood, growing up without a father. Maybe he's restoring that, just occurred to me, through having kids. And I don't know if that's kind of what you were getting at too, Kevin, a little bit, but I'm starting to understand more by my own relationship with my daughter. I've got a 3-year-old daughter, and for years she was this perfectly easy kid. Ariel was so, as some of you guys know her, she was so easy. I was like, this is great. Like, she's not a challenge or anything. And you know, discipline was never even an issue. I was like, we're never going to need to discipline this kid, because basically we just come up and we try to redirect her, and she's like, okay. And well, about age 2.5 or something, she'd been storing up for like 30 months of her new life. She'd been storing up all this willpower and stubbornness, and it came out like in a week's time. And Suzanne and I were like, whoa, especially Suzanne, because she's with her all day, all the time. And we were just like, what are we going to do? We've got to really learn how to do this discipline thing now. And it's interesting, when we started using good discipline, it changed her attitude suddenly from being kind of a mopey kid. When we engaged her in a disciplinary way, it actually, contrary to what your intuition would think, she actually has this peace that comes over her and this happiness, and she plays better, she enjoys life better. There's something inside of a child and inside of people in general that we need to have someone that's giving us loving attention and giving us boundaries, and actually someone with a bigger, long perspective that can help shape us and form us in ways that we couldn't on our own if we were left to our own devices. It's so much easier as a father to just let things go in the moment. It's easier to say, okay, you know, here's a situation I'm going to have to get involved in, and use discipline and enforce boundaries, and that's going to take a lot of energy and time. It's worth it. It's good for her. And I've got a long-term perspective for her. A true father has a long perspective. We don't merely look at the moment. We're seeing how is our daughter, our son, arising from their environment to be who they're meant to be. But so often it's really hard, this process of formation. Some of us have ongoing dark things in our lives, ongoing crises that are chronic and never-ending, health problems, addictions, just all kinds of things that all of us are facing in different ways, depression. And sometimes it's hard to really see beyond that. We're in the moment. We're just right there in this moment of suffering, and it's a long season of time. The previous chapter in Hebrews, it's basically a hall of the faith heroes, Hebrews 11. Read it sometime, and it just describes all the heroes of our faith throughout history, or many of the highlights. And it makes some amazing statements. And a couple points, it says, in Hebrews 11:13, it says this. It says, all of these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance, admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on the earth. Do you ever feel like a foreigner and a stranger in the world because of whatever's going on? It goes on to say later, these were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised. God had planned something better for all of us so that together we would be made complete. It's a hard thing to think about. And for people who are enduring years and years and seasons that never end, you're in touch with this. You understand. This is a reality. It's not bad news. It's not bursting a bubble. This is reality. Like, yeah, life is like that. It's an ongoing struggle. It's difficult. But I want to remind you from Hebrews 11, you're in good company. That doesn't make it necessarily easier. But when you're facing that, when you're enduring that long struggle of formation that you don't even know what's going on and you're losing heart, you're in good company. The heroes of our faith were formed in the same way. Jesus Christ was formed in his earthly life the same way. He learned obedience through the things he suffered. So just be reminded that your baptismal life is leading to a great rising up in the future. That you feel like you're being thrust under. Your only experience of the Christian life is going under the water. But that's the precedent to a great rising up. You see, in this passage in verse 11 at the end, it closes by saying, but later it leads to a harvest of peace and righteousness for those who are trained by it. A harvest of peace and righteousness. These words are really significant in Scripture. When you see them, be alerted to something. These are marks of the age to come. These are marks of the time that restoration happens to creation, the time of the resurrection, the time when God renovates the structure of all of his creation and makes it what it's intended to be. There's an age coming that Scripture describes to us. These words, if they had been written in Hebrew, they would be shalom and tzedakah, peace, harmony, And righteousness, justice, things are made right. Tzedakah, shalom, peace and righteousness. These are marks of the age to come. In Isaiah chapter 9, it describes the coming kingdom of the Messiah. It says, of the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on forever. There's an age coming of restoration, and we don't see that now sometimes, but we're in good company as we journey through this baptismal life towards that great rising that is yet to be. In the last words of this section, it says, for those who are trained by it, this harvest, be trained by this formative process. Allow yourself, be submitted to it, as hard as that is, for all the reasons that seem right. Allow yourself to be formed. Don't resist it. Don't make light of it. Don't dismiss it. Don't resent it. Allow yourself to be trained by the true Father's formation in your life. He has your good in mind. He's got a good place. He is leading you. So So I want to ask us to take a few moments just to look in our lives, to maybe look inward, look at our hearts, and then look outward, look at it where we've come from, and just take some silent prayer and meditation about this as the band assembles. I just want to take a few moments of reflection on what God might be saying to us in this training. Father, and that you have good plans for us, Lord. And I ask that in those times when we are in the wilderness and we are losing heart, losing faith, you would sustain us, that you would give us everything we need to be formed in the way that you want us to be, God. And give us willing hearts, soften our hearts, make us tender, receptive to what you are doing, oh God. Let us be trained by life. Let us be trained by the circumstances that you have allowed into this story. We know that you have promises. We know that it may be a long time before we see them come to fruit. Thank you that we are in good company and that we know that you have amazing plans for us at the other end of this.